I never met Robert Louis Stevenson in the flesh, though I owe so much to him in the literary spirit. Never can I forget the delight with which I read those early stories of his in The Cornhill, before I knew the name of the author. I still think that The Pavilion on the Links is one of the great short stories of the world, though there were alterations in the final form, which were all for the worse, and showed prudery upon the part of the publishers. Stevenson's last year at Edinburgh University must have just about coincided with my first one, and Barry must also have been in that grey old nest of learning, about the year 1876. Strange to think that I probably brushed elbows with both of them in the crowded portal. From his faraway home in Samoa, he seemed to keep a quick eye upon literary matters in England, and I had most encouraging letters from him in 1893 and 1894. "Oh, frolic fellow spookist," was his curious term of personal salutation in one of these, which showed that he shared my interest in psychic research, but did not take it very seriously. I cannot guess how at that time he had detected it, though I was aware that he had himself in early days acted as secretary to a psychic research, or rather to a spiritualist society in Edinburgh, which studied the remarkable mediumship of Duguid. His letters to me consisted of kind appreciation of my work. "I have a great talent for compliment," he said, accompanied by a hateful and even a diabolic frankness. He had been retailing some of my Sherlock Holmes yarns to his native servants. I should not have thought that he needed to draw upon anyone else, and he complained to me in a comical letter of the difficulty of telling a story when you had to halt every moment to explain what a railway was, what an engineer was, and so forth. He got the story across in spite of all difficulties, and said he, "If you could have seen the bright feverish eyes of Symite, you would have tasted glory." But he explained that the natives took everything literally, and that there was no such thing as an imaginary story for them. "I, who write this, have had the indiscretion to perpetuate a trifling piece of fiction, The Bottle Imp. Parties who come up to visit my mansion, after having admired the ceiling by Van der Putty and the tapestry by Gobling, manifest towards the end a certain uneasiness which proves them to be fellows of an infinite delicacy. They may be seen to shrug a brown shoulder, to roll up a speaking eye, and at last the secret bursts from them. Where is the bottle?" In another letter, he said that as I had written of my first book in The Idler, he also would do so. I could not hold back where the white plume of Conan Doyle waved in front of me. So at least I may boast that it is to me that the world owes the little personal sketch about Treasure Island, which appeared in that year. I cannot forget the shock that it was to me when, driving down the Strand in a hansom cab in 1896, I saw upon a yellow evening poster, "Death of Stevenson." Something seemed to have passed out of my world. I was asked by his executors to finish the novel St. Ives, which he had left three quarters completed, but I did not feel equal to the task. It was done, however, and I understand very well done by Quiller Couch. It is a desperately difficult thing to carry on another man's story, and must be a more or less mechanical effort.